Well, hey, guys.
Hey, Laurel.
So, everybody out there in podcast land, obviously, there has been a lot of coverage of the new coronavirus, pretty warranted, obviously. And maybe you came to the podcast this week for a little bit of a break from that, some kind of straight politics news from the Wisconsin Capitol, obviously what we normally do.
Yeah, but here's the thing. This week in Wisconsin state government and politics, pretty much every story has to do with the coronavirus. It's just what the story is.
Yeah, I mean, your state government is handling a big part of the response to the coronavirus. The Department of Health Services was granted new emergency powers this week by the governor. There is an election coming up in April. These things are still happening, and we're here to tell you about them.
So let's do it.
This is the WPR Politics Podcast. I'm John K. Wilson.
I'm Sean Johnson.
And I'm Laurel White.
This week, we talk about Wisconsin government and politics in the age of coronavirus. So just on a personal note, how you guys doing? How you holding up?
I feel like I'm glad that other people are slightly freaked out now because I've been there for a few weeks. Laurel and I can now communicate. She turned a corner this week. I don't know if it was before or after all the sporting events closed and Tom Hanks was announced to have been diagnosed with COVID-19.
Tom Hanks was the turning point for me. No, not really. But yeah.
I don't know. It's a little anxiety inducing out there, but state government and politics news is still happening.
Yeah. I mean, where do we start with that?
How about the governor of the state of Wisconsin? This is not sequentially, but he had a big announcement this week about declaring a public health emergency.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is a great place to start because this is a declaration that has kind of a trickle-down effect on a lot of other things and things we're going to be talking about for a long time. So what was in this emergency declaration? Like, basically, what does it do?
I feel like the language is pretty broad. That's what got me. And I don't know if this is just like boilerplate language every time that the governor calls an emergency declaration for, you know, you name it, flooding, whatever.
But this was Wednesday morning, right?
That's right. That was Wednesday morning. I'm thinking back across what seems like ages ago.
No, it was yesterday morning.
Oh, it was yesterday.
It was Thursday morning.
It was Thursday. See?
Yeah.
News in the age of the new coronavirus.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is hard to keep track
of it. Literally yesterday morning at actually 11:30. So practically yesterday afternoon.
Weird.
Yeah.
How many of you out there are having those moments? I'm sorry, I can't hear you because the podcast doesn't work that way. But if you just said me.
Yeah,
I hear you.
All right, so Thursday morning.
He declared a public health emergency. I guess the thing that got me is just the language in this declaration just really gives his Department of Health Services very broad authority to deal with this public health emergency. Hey, a quick update here. After we recorded the podcast, Governor Tony Evers used those new powers granted to his Department of Health Services to order all Wisconsin public schools closed. That order begins on March 19th. So March 19th is the first day that kids have to be out of school. And it runs until April 6th, meaning that is the earliest that kids could come back to school. It could be longer. Other local districts can close earlier if they want, and they can stay closed later if they want. And some have been doing that. To check updates, go to WPR.org. Okay, back to the podcast.
From looking at the from the statement that came out yesterday from the governor's office, some specific things in there included changing some of the rules about medications and how those can be distributed and such. Also stuff about state money being released to help the effort.
There was also some stuff in there about predatory pricing by retailers, or, you know, it could be like from scam artists, right? Mm-hmm. Like, hey, you want some Purell? This will cost you $500. You know, like there's language. It pointed to a statute that I looked at, and it's a statute that talks about in a time of an economic emergency, basically, mm-hmm. that you can't inflate your prices to take advantage of the public. So that's also in this declaration.
Another but thing.
Cling to your Purell, though, people. This is it's liquid gold.
Yeah.
I found some while cleaning out a drawer this morning.
Oh, my gosh. He was so
How
excited.
Happy was I?
I wish that you could have been here for that moment of joy, pod listeners.
Awesome.
Although still washing your hands with soap and water is what health experts say is actually most effective.
And we're not even being jokey about this. It doesn't hurt to hear that every so often, that is the best way to do it. But it doesn't hurt to have some Purell around when you can't wash your hands.
So back to the emergency order, the governor also authorized the release of some state money for local health officials to combat the crisis, also authorizing the use of the National Guard if needed.
Yeah, I was going to say that was another thing that stood out to me. Mm-hmm.
And they helped transport some Wisconsin residents who had been aboard a cruise ship that was one of those cruise ships that was under quarantine because of COVID-19.
Speaking of quarantines and such, this is sort of a side story, something that you reported on earlier in the week, Laurel, about sort of the rules of enforcing quarantines in Wisconsin and how that's laid out.
Yeah, it was as of this morning, the number one story on our website. So well, there I think you go. People,
look at that.
People are into this
Don't
story.
Mind if I do.
BPR.org/LaurelWhite.
Actually, that isn't the real
That's
URL.
That's not a website.
don't go there.
But this was a really interesting story to report. So basically, I looked into what the quarantine laws are in Wisconsin. There are some really steep penalties for people if they violate a quarantine order, either by going out in the world when they know they're sick and they're not supposed to, or trying to enter an area that's been designated as a quarantine area. That's the biggest penalty. So if the state dictates that there's a quarantined area that unauthorized people are not supposed to go into, the fine is up to $10,000, 9 months in jail. People that, you know, are authorized by the state, like healthcare workers or other folks, are obviously able to go in there. The fine for someone who is sick and goes out into the world when they're not supposed to is $500. And a much smaller jail time potential. Obviously, these are all ranges.
This was not part of this emergency declaration that the governor announced this week. You were looking up Wisconsin's existing law for quarantines in a public health situation.
Yeah, exactly. This is stuff that's been on the books for a long time. I think another interesting thing is that there's actually something called a quarantine guard written into state law. I thought this was really interesting. These are individuals that would be hired by government officials to help enforce quarantines. And according to the law, they would have police powers and could use whatever means necessary to enforce quarantine. So that was pretty striking.
It doesn't have to be like existing law enforcement agencies who are the ones who are enforcing these quarantines.
No. I mean, it says the local health officials can hire these individuals to do this. So, I mean, they could hire who they wanted to hire.
So you asked the DHS about this, right, in one of their conference calls?
I did. So what they said is that as of right now in Wisconsin, or as of at that time, which was earlier this week, all of the quarantines in Wisconsin so far had been voluntary. So the state hadn't had to issue any orders or compel people to be in quarantine, which would, you know, set in place the possibility for fines to be issued, right? So I asked them, is this something that you see happening in the future? For example, if there's a larger scale community quarantine, right now quarantines have just been for confirmed cases, those patients and people that have been in direct contact with them. If there's a larger quarantine of like a community that we've seen in some other areas, do you foresee people getting tickets for violating that? What do you see the enforcement being? And essentially what they told me was that's too far down the road to comment on right now. That's several steps away, and we will, you know, evaluate that as we need to, as things continue to kind of develop.
And just to illustrate sort of the way that this story has developed so quickly, Laurel, if you don't mind sharing, how did you feel to be that reporter on the conference call asking DHS officials about the possibility of quarantine guards.
I felt weird. I felt weird asking that question. I think there were a lot of reporters on this call. I think at the very beginning it said like 50 some reporters on this call from DHS, from all around the state, some from Minnesota. And most of the questions were things like, tell us about the new cases, tell us where these people have been.
Important questions.
Very, very important questions. And then I sort of come in with a, when are we going to start finding people? You know, what's the, these are, I think to some people, the thought of a quarantine guard or people violating guidance from the government that's meant to keep people safe might seem a little bit scary, right?
Orwellian,
yeah. And so I had that moment of like, gosh, is this a little bit too much? Is this mm-hmm. a little bit too weird? I feel like I'm coming at this from a different place than a lot of other people on this call.
It doesn't feel that way a few days later to me.
Yeah.
It feels like information I'm glad we have.
Yeah. You
know? And it's not happening now, but I'm glad the info's out there and I know about these things.
Yeah, and I think it's important that when we reported on it and we talk about it, we do sort of include the caveat. I've had this caveat conversation on the pod before. That you include the information that people have been very, very cooperative so far. So this is not something that has even come close to happening in Wisconsin yet.
So how about just normal state government business here at the Capitol?
Well,
what's been going on in that neck of the woods?
If you want to take a tour of the Wisconsin Capitol, sorry.
Now is not the time.
You can't do it. You're going to have to go back to that podcast we recorded.
Yeah, I was just going to plug that.
During those wistful, slow news days of last summer.
I mean, as of right now, the Capitol building is still open, so you could do your self-guided tour.
You can come check it out.
They're just not doing public tours.
I don't know if you noticed this in the show last week, but there were children's voices in the background I was hearing clearly. Because when we recorded last week, there are all these kids that are touring the Capitol. It is a part of Wisconsin, and that's not happening now. Actually, walking into the Capitol today, I was struck by how quiet.
So quiet.
The hallways were just unusually quiet here.
Yeah.
I feel like that's something that we're going to start to get used to here in other settings too.
Well, and I was thinking about it, and this is kind of a segue into the next thing that we can talk about is if the Senate does come in, as they are expected to do sometime later this month.
Scheduled. Let's say scheduled. I'm not sure I'm expecting anymore.
Yeah. Expected is maybe not the best word. What's the Capitol going to feel like then? Normally on a session day, it is so hectic in here. And I was thinking about how quiet it was this morning and what sort of contrast that would be if that happened. And it's hard to imagine the same number of people coming to the Capitol for a session day the way things are right now. I mean, there are 33 senators. Each would have at least one staff member here to help them out. There are all the technology service workers for the legislature that help with the voting equipment, with all of that, you know, other like the pages, the clerk's office.
Really the lobbyists too.
Sure.
I know they don't literally have to be there. Like if you're a page and 33 senators decide we're going to have a session day, you have to be there. It's part of your job. But the people who have an interest in what's going on there will also be there, which is why you get some crowds outside of the Senate some on those busy days. Mm-hmm. So it's all just a little bit busier when that's happening. Well, and right now that is scheduled to happen.
Yeah. And reporters, there are, you know, at least 10 reporters that are there for any given session day, at least.
I have heard they are people too.
Yep.
I'm not sure about that, but on our best days,
no. We're people too. But I think that's really interesting to think about because there's guidance coming from like the UW-Madison has said meetings of more than 50 people, right,
are not advisable. I don't remember the exact number.
Yeah, we haven't mentioned that yet, but the University of Wisconsin-Madison and many other UW campuses this week, as
and
you
many
may have heard
private
by now,
schools too,
have said students don't come back from spring break. You know, spring break was scheduled to for, you know, Madison, I know, end March 24th. And they're saying, don't come back until at least April 10th. We'll do distance. We're going to extend spring break by a week, and then we're going to do distance learning until at least April 10th. Yeah. So
That's at Madison, I should say, as someone who helped edit a lot of the ongoing coverage of that. Different campuses have different variations on extending spring break and how they're doing distance learning. But generally, that's the pattern, is that, you know, spring break being extended and then moving to some model for, you know, some period of time of doing non-face-to-face classes.
They'll revisit it, though.
Yeah. Some students are still able to stay in on-campus housing, but university officials in a lot of cases are asking, you know, if you're able to return to your permanent residence and able to take online classes that way, to do that, to try and reduce the number of people in dorms and such. But anyway, back to the legislature.
Yeah, I mean, that's not... I think my point there was, you know, there are limits on the number of people that are gathering in a certain place. That's not really something the legislature can accomplish super easily, to have a very small gathering, because of just the number of senators, the number of staff, the number of workers that are needed for them to have an in-person session day.
They could, in theory, restrict the number of people who are in the Senate chamber.
Mm-hmm.
They could do that.
Okay, so that would be a way to put a cap on the number of people. But they can't, you know, we're talking about remote learning for some campuses across Wisconsin. It's not like senators can
vote
virtually. Yeah,
no,
it's not an option.
Not under Senate rules.
They cannot work from home on a session day.
What about in the assembly? I know there has been some talk about whether or not there would be opportunity for the assembly to come back and take up stuff related to the coronavirus.
So Assembly Speaker Voss has said that he doesn't see that being a necessity right now. He said that if there is a request for additional funding, the Joint Finance Committee can meet and release that to DHS on a case-by-case basis. But he didn't see the necessity for coming in and passing specific measures in response to coronavirus.
So as we alluded to briefly in the introduction, there's this election thing coming up, too. What's going on with that?
There's a lot to unpack because, you know, there is the political story of will we have a Bernie versus Biden primary here that is, you know, competitive or not? How will that affect the state Supreme Court race between Justice Dan Kelly and Judge Jill Karofsky? You know, if there's not a competitive Democratic primary, Democrats aren't going to see a turnout bump because of that. But there's also the human act of voting. Mm-hmm. And we are being told to limit our interactions with groups of people right now.
Mm-hmm.
And yet here we have this election where we encourage groups of people to come out and vote.
Yeah.
It is democracy. It is what it's supposed to look like. Laurel, you were at the Elections Commission this week, and they talked about some really specific things that they are changing. And what are those?
So the Elections Commission held an emergency meeting this week. And as of right now, what they're doing is they've passed a plan that's going to give local election officials more flexibility to move polling places if they need to, specifically polling places that are in nursing homes. We know that elderly populations are more vulnerable to the new coronavirus, and so in response to that, election officials are going to be able to make that change. It's actually outside of the normal window for them to be able to do that. Under state law, they need to have polling places set before 30 days before the election. We're 25 days from the primary right now, so they're obviously past that period. There is another provision in law that allows them to move the polling place on the actual election day if there's some sort of natural disaster or emergency, but we're in a weird window where obviously it's not the day of the election for them to move something. So we might see more polling places other than nursing homes, places like schools, community centers, things that are identified by health officials as locations that might not be optimal for a polling place changed as well. According to the Elections Commission, election officials are going to work with health officials to determine what's not a good place, what should be moved going forward, and that there are going to be specific requirements for notifying voters about polling places that are changed. Another thing, too, that they approved, voting assistants that come into nursing homes to help residents of nursing homes, they're called special voting deputies, aren't going to be used for this presidential primary. Instead, residents at nursing facilities are going to be able to request mail-in absentee ballots.
And kind of a side note, this is not from state government, you know, the Elections Commission, but groups that have an interest in this election, like the Democratic Party, for example, has now said that it's not going to be doing its traditional door-to-door get-out-the-vote operation, mm-hmm. and it's going to be doing everything digitally. I think that's kind of big news in a way, because mm-hmm. you have this, you know, very partisan, nonpartisan race, and Dems are saying, look, we're going to do more of a get-out-the-vote effort this time. We're going to mobilize people. They're not gonna do it by doing doors, which is like a staple of every campaign.
Yeah,
so
that's been huge for them. I think another couple things to mention just really quick. We could so easily go down a rabbit hole here, but during the Elections Commission meeting, they talked about other potential ramifications of the coronavirus on the election. One of those was that poll workers traditionally have sometimes been older folks, volunteers. There might not be as many people from that population that are willing to be poll workers or should be poll workers for the primary on April 7th. What sort of effect is that going to have? Are they going to have to consolidate some polling locations just because of staffing shortages?
Yeah, I'm just thinking about where mm-hmm. I vote, and that is absolutely true.
Yeah. So that's something that we're going to keep an eye on, and that election officials said they're going to potentially address in more meetings before the election. So this is obviously, things are changing quickly and more mm-hmm. things might change.
Well, that is a lot of stuff.
Yeah. How does it feel to be living through history? It's not great, right?
I did think, as we've taken some personal precautionary measures, you know, I went stocked up on like dog food for my dogs and, you know, stuff like that. And I was thinking
for my
about
dogs.
I went and stocked up on dog food for me.
But, like, you know, I was like, I feel like this is something that we're going to talk about hopefully in several years. Just reflecting on what we all did and what it felt like to be experiencing this.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I got the feeling this week, and maybe it's because I work in the news and so I'm, you know, exposed to the stories and sort of have that in my face all the time. The news about the virus, not the actual virus, hopefully. But the story seems to be a story that I'm living through now, as opposed to it was a story that I was reading about in other parts of the world, and like it was this huge thing that was going on in other parts of the world. Now it sort of seems to have turned that corner for me personally to feeling like, this is something that's going on here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think we have already turned that corner on this is... It's history. I guess our best case scenario is that it is written about in terms of a pandemic that people took major reactions to. You know, the NBA season was postponed. Mm-hmm. The NCAA tournament canceled. People were sent home from work. Events were canceled everywhere. But that it wasn't as bad as we all thought it would be. Mm-hmm. That's like the best case scenario, is that it works and everybody's complaining about overreaction, right?
Yeah.
And then the worst case scenario is that we didn't react soon enough. But either way, it's what we're going through right now. It feels like a lot because it is.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm glad we get to talk through it a little bit with you guys.
Yeah, me too. This gets me right.
Yeah. Well, hope you're staying safe out there in Podland.
Yeah, exactly.
Wash your hands.
Sean Johnson is WPR's Capitol bureau chief.
Laurel White is WPR's Capitol reporter.
And John K. Wilson is our resident politics nerd.
Even if things get a little crazy and we're not all in the same place, we will still do our best to get new episodes of the WPR Politics podcast out there almost every single week. You can subscribe to get new ones that we put out on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and many other podcast apps. And you can catch up on all of our past episodes anytime at wpr.org/politics.